to our third talk on Joshua, advancing the kingdom and holding the ground. It was a new season, and many people have been feeling that there's new season in the air for some while. Some churches have entered into it sooner than others, and in the end I expect the Lord will rush us all into the next season, whether we're ready for it or not. I kind of think we've been in a season of summer for a while in our culture, and now we're coming into the autumn. Autumn is where you have the fruitful and the harvest, of course. So I know there's a couple of harvests in the biblical part of the world, in the Middle East, but God is bringing us, if you will follow that terminology, into a time of harvest. And that's exciting, because as Moses was leading the people out, as we have heard this morning, Joshua is leading the people in. Moses out from the world, Joshua into the promised land. So today's agenda, I've copied a lot of Andy's handouts. A brief recap. Well, in some ways, we're going to do the brief recap. We've done it. And then the idea of following the presence of God. As you remember, the presence of God was associated with the ark. Consecrating ourselves, getting ourselves ready for what's to come, ready to follow the Lord. Going into the new things. I would suggest to you, if we really want the obvious presence of God with miracles, they tend to happen. This is just my observation. Miracles tend to happen when you go into new territory. Once you've been there for a while, they sort of fade. And that's often the sign that you should have actually moved on a little bit quicker. That's how I feel. But anyway, the importance of the presence. That's not only the presence of God, but our presence, and we'll look a little bit into that. And then I put intentional memory markers. I'll explain a bit more than that. But if you remember, there were 12 people. Again, I'm assuming, like Sonny, and you know, I've assumed that you are familiar with some of the story. If not, read up Joshua chapter 3 and a bit of Joshua chapter 4 when you get home, and then listen to this again when it's on the website, and hopefully it'll make a bit more sense. Sonny's stuff and Andy's stuff has been excellent to listen again to. I was here when Andy did the introduction. Fantastic. Sonny's, you know, spying out the land, also fantastic. Listen to the audio. The PowerPoints don't do it justice, or at least that's what I feel. My PowerPoints certainly don't, because it changes. The Spirit sort of changes the emphasis often in the worship, and you've got to be part of that revelation, that river. It's no good standing on the bank in just writing a sermon down when you're in your study. You've got to be in the river. And talking of in the river, the intentional memory markers, the 12 stones that were picked up from the center of the river. If you remember, the River Jordan effectively suddenly dried up, although it was in flood at harvest time. It suddenly dried up when the soles of the feet of the priests carrying the ark went into the water. Nothing happened until they stepped out into the water. And they then picked up these stones, dry stones, from the middle. 12 people. Again, we could talk about the number 12, but we might or may not. Anyway, to recap, the importance of miracles, Andy emphasized this, and I think if we're coming into a new season, then we can expect new miracles, new leaders, new way of doing things. Perhaps spacious place has been a part of that. Three things to avoid: disobedience to God's commands, failing to seek God's advice. Do you remember when Joshua at one stage just, he thought he didn't have to come, it was so obvious, it was a no-brainer, and so he didn't use his brain, or the revelation that comes from the Holy Spirit. And not forgetting God's miracles and provision. We can live in poverty if we don't remember what God has done for us. And Joshua, of course, as a type of Christ whom we follow. Oh, and the warfare bit is different in the Old Covenant and the New Covenant. The Old Covenant was about a physical nation, a physical people of God. The New Covenant is about spiritual territory. Our weapons are not fleshy weapons. No machetes allowed, as Sunny pointed out. We do not do that. We do prayer. We do, well, various other weapons we've got. I won't remind you and make draw into it. Then, of course, Sunny's excellent talk, spying out, but we're looking for new opportunities. We're not looking for reasons to go back. It's a strategy. Not a management, it's a military strategy. How can we get out there and get into that, rather than how can we help things running smoothly? Things don't run smoothly. Looking for people of peace, people who might be able to come onto our side, people who might be able to help us along, might be able to articulate what the need is out there. Then there's the rules of engagement, that we have to be prepared, we have to be forgiven. That's very important, no hang-ups. I think we might mention that a little bit later on. We have to pray for one another, cover one another's backs, as Sonny put it. Just like Jesus prayed for Peter's faith, not to fail. Notice he never prayed for Judas's faith, not to fail, because he knew Judas had already made his mind up. Mind you, so had Peter, and that's why Jesus prayed for Peter. Resist. If it's easy and smooth all the way along the way, maybe we're not quite on the edge. I know that we do look for that peace, but that's the peace that passes all understanding. If we can understand the peace, we may not have pushed, well, the boat out far enough. Again, change of metaphor, sorry. And then we've got to be fit. We've got to be able to move and proactive, not waiting for things to slap us around the face, but getting out there and seeing what God is doing. Follow the presence. Now, this is the start of, if you like, my talk, follow the presence. This is today's agenda. And I'll tell you what I'm going to say today again. I've just copied that. Now, the ark was the presence of God. Don't you wish that in some ways we had a cloud we could follow, or a fire by night? We've got something better. It's just that we don't know it very often. We've got that voice that speaks to us, that leads us, that is so much more powerful than just having something external. My eyes like to see something. I was a physicist. I like doing material science. I love the science of it all. But we walk by faith, not by sight. And that's a challenge, particularly if we're used to walking by sight. The ark was the physical presence of God. There was some sort of Shekinah glory or a bright light even emanating from just above the box with all the angels looking down, the two cherubim looking down on it. We don't really understand it, we can't really, but that's what they wrote. And they weren't allowed to go too close to the ark, it was too dangerous. They had to keep about a kilometre away. If you believe that, that actually measures. They weren't allowed to get too close to God's presence, to God's glory, because it was, well, dangerous. But we don't come to a God of a consuming fire. Not now. We have God in us. Where is God today? Well, I've already gave you yes, God is in his word, the Bible. God is in our praises. He dwells in our praises. And he dwells in us. Now that's when I started to think of feet. Not because my first job was a salesman at a shoe shop, but feet. If you've got a bad foot, then it's hard work to walk anywhere. I will give you every place where you set your foot, as I promised Moses. That's what God repeated to Joshua. You see, I just had a brief thought about feet and the importance of presencing ourselves physically in some situations. If you remember, when God first introduced himself to Moses, he says, take your shoes off. This is holy ground. You know, the burning bush episode where Moses wasn't sure what he was going to have a look at, but God spoke to him from the burning bush and said, take your shoes off. Those dirty shoes aren't acceptable in my presence. And then my little brain went to Peter walking on the water. So he stepped out of the boat, put his foot on the water, and it held him up apparently. So he took the other foot out. And as he was walking towards Jesus, all was well, but then he started to look around using his physical eyes. And he saw the wind, he saw the waves, he saw the water, and thought, heck. And he started to sink. Fortunately, he then saw Jesus, who reached out and grabbed him. See, Peter went into a new experience there, and I guess he felt stupid, and I guess he felt his friends said, oh, I told you not to do that. But he was the only one that walked on the water, yeah. Albeit temporarily. And then I thought of other missteps. When we're doing things for the Lord, we make mistakes, don't we? We do mishear. That's why we often have to say, oh, I think God is saying this to me, because we get it wrong so often. And God reveals partially things to us, even when you have an interpretation of a tongue. Very often you hear one or two people bring interpretations. If you've got two, or you've hopefully got a better interpretation than if just one person. It's just the way it works. But when you get out of the boat and start walking with the Lord, when you're walking into new territory, because that's what the ark was going, it was leading the people in ways that they hadn't been before, then you do make mistakes. And so we come to foot washing. Jesus washing the feet of the disciples. And of course, when he came to Peter, Peter objected. And then Jesus insisted, so Peter said, oh, well, wash me all then. And Jesus said, no, you're clean. You've had a bath. I've just got to wash your feet because you have misstepped on your way here. It's good that you've been walking with me, but unfortunately, have a look down, you have stepped in something not very pleasant. So I'll wash your feet. And we do need to wash one another's feet. Jesus said, now watch what I have done for you. Just like I have washed your feet, you will have to wash one another's feet. My interpretation for that, when we're walking with the Lord and we've all made mistakes, then we all need to forgive one another. You know, somebody will get over enthusiastic. Well, forgive them. Somebody will be down in the dumps at 5 o'clock in the morning. It doesn't matter. I was asleep then. We have to forgive one another, because that is one of Satan's great strategies, getting in between. Because wherever God calls us to walk together, if Satan can get in between, and that's a very effective tactic in churches, in life, well, in everything, isn't it? I was listening to a program yesterday about the Kellogg brothers. Did you know there were two brothers who set up business together, the Kelloggs? One that had a new product idea, so he decided to venture out on his own. It was called Bran. The other person also had a product idea. He set out in the final, he wasn't allowed to call his product Bran, so he called it all Bran! And they sued each other for the rest of their lives. Pathetic. Satan's really good at splitting family, and we are the family of God. Feet shod with the readiness of the gospel of peace. That comes to our army metaphor. That was Paul talking in 1 Corinthians 10, talking about, well, how we've got to be willing to go places, step on thorns, run. Like a Roman soldier, often was able to, they were able to run together at the same speed because they all had decent sandals. And they're able to tread on thorn and go over stones and not say, oh, ouch, ouch, each. And yet so often in churches, many of the churches I've been, you've always got to be careful. You mustn't step on somebody else's feet. You always, he's a bit touchy about this or that. Let's be careful. And we end up being more careful about our fellow officers, about our fellow soldiers, than we are about loving one another and being there for each other and running quickly. So it was Paul's reflection on the Roman soldier that talked about the way his sandals were powerful because it helped him traverse the ground quickly without having to worry about thorns and briars and pieces of Lego. Have you ever stepped on a piece of Lego?
Yeah.
Oh. So that's, if you like, I'm sure there's more things on feet and going places. But yeah, we do have to be ready to move quickly and toughen up a bit. Consecrating ourselves, what does that mean? Well, of course, Andy did talk about this, but I think I put speaking up. And Andy called it declaration, but I've called it speaking up because D and S. Look at me other ones, they're all S's. Speaking up, actually saying what we are consecrating, what we're going to focus on, what we think God is going to use us, or owning it, pray it in front of others, even if it's embarrassing. Oh dear. I mean, I don't know what's going to do, but as you may know, I'm getting married in October. I don't know if you do. I mean, that's been a challenge because it's a new season and things like that. I mean, but my wife-to-be, who would have liked to have been here, except for it was her birthday and she had Abigail, her niece, staying yesterday, and they've been doing bridesmaid dresses and all the things I'm not allowed to see. So I'm going to go there this afternoon, not bring her here this morning, sorry. But, yeah, you've got to speak up. And one of the new things that God's doing in my life is I'm getting married. Not quite in the morning, but in October. And, you know, it's great. It's exciting. But there will be new things that I'll have to enter into. And new ways I'll have to learn of doing things. Of course, I'm perfect, I don't need. Very bold new world. The other thing, consecrating ourselves, seeking God, putting time aside. There's so many good things that we should be doing. It spreads a little bit onto the next thing. But so many good things that we should be doing. But we have to set those, some of the good. We don't do the bad anymore, I hope. But we do an awful lot of good. And sometimes you have to set aside the good things in order to seek God. We've only got 24 hours in a day. And we're only human beings. Seeking God. Sorry I wasn't there on Friday. But Fridays don't are a good day for me. I'm always doing something on a Friday. Sacrifices was the next S. But by that I mean pruning. And if you wanted to change the metaphor, do you remember Jesus talking about the vine in John chapter 10? He says, even the fruitful vine, the branches, I prune, the Father prunes. Now, you may have been doing some things in your past very, very fruitfully. Doesn't mean to say that that's going to stay there forever. because you might have something new to move on to, so that the miracles can accompany you into the new situation, so that you have new challenges, you develop in new ways, you don't just get old and fuddy-duddy. You're young but mature. Oh yes, I'd like to be young but not mature. That's the trouble with youth, it's wasted on those immature people, isn't it? You know, you and I, 40 years ago. But yeah, things have to be pruned away. Even good things, fruitful things, things we used to do. And sometimes, again, looking at, I've got the privilege of going around a lot of churches, and some of those churches have just been so bad at pruning, that's it. They're almost dead in the water, some of those. Because the fruit becomes old, it falls off, the branch is no longer fruitful. If it starts to rot on the branch, it can smell a bit. Use your own metaphors, but we do need to keep fresh. And even some of our strengths, great, they're your strengths, encourage somebody else to become strong in that area whilst we move on. I find all this a great challenge to me, if you hadn't noticed, by the way. It's not just a challenge to you guys and the church here. It's a big challenge to me. And then, of course, to concentrate on being special to our commander. Don't, again, Sonny emphasised that. Don't get distracted by the world. New things, a brief look. We need miracles because I look out at the world as I see it with my eyes of natural eyes. And I can't see any hope for the church. With AI, with the powers that the world has now, with everything going on in our culture, we're in trouble. Except God is bringing us into a new season, and he's the one that's going to make the distance. AI may have a better intellect than us. It can be connected to things that are far stronger than us. But one thing it isn't, it's not God-sensitive, whilst you and I are. The other reason why I want miracles is when we've had miracles in the past, we end up taking them for granted, or we forget them. We want to remember them, so hence we have, as I say, we come onto those stones from the middle of the river, intentional memories. But even manna was taken for granted. Bread from heaven falling down. They didn't have to sow, they didn't have to reap. All they had to do was get up and have manna. And if the early bird had taken all the manna, it didn't matter because there was still enough to go round. Everybody had exactly what they needed. You just weren't allowed to be lazy and lay in bed because you wouldn't get anything there. But manna got taken for granted, and people started to say, I hate this manna. It's always manna, nothing but manna. It tastes of curds and whey and honey and all the things we dreamed about, but I want meat, I want quail. Do you remember that story? Give me quail. Give me quail. And again, I don't think the people that left Egypt were ever going to conquer the promised land. God gave them a chance. He gave an awful lot of lessons, as Sonny pointed out. But they remembered too much Egypt. It was the next generation that didn't remember Egypt that was willing to trust the Lord for the future. When I look at the church in this land, many of the churches go back to that. I remember the days we were full. I remember the days that nobody went and worked on Sunday. I remember the days. No. That's old manna. We've taken it all for granted. Let's go for the new miracles. God is working already. That's the other thing I've realised more and more. God is working in, and he's calling us to join in with what he's doing. So, when he asks us to cross the Jordan, it's not because he's not there. It's not because he's got no plans. As you see, he'd already been working in Rahab's heart. He'd already been stirring up the nations in the case of Joshua. So many times when we do pluck up the courage and we talk to somebody about Christ, suddenly we realize that God has been working in their lives already. And we're not bringing Christ to them. Christ is already involved in their life. They may not know it. We may just be articulating what deep down they know already. God is working. He wants us to join in with him. And a lovely saying, I don't know where I got this from, I think probably from Lizzie. God wants to work with us. He doesn't want to do it for us. It's a God of multiplication. So if we put one in, he comes up with his six. Great, fantastic. If we put nothing in, my maths is pretty good, but I think you also know how many zeros you can multiply. Infinity times zero is zero. No effort, no gain. But how God multiplies. He doesn't add, he doesn't subtract. He multiplies us and he divides those who are on Satan's side. Because it is a case of two kingdoms fighting it out in this world. I would almost put to you, I mean, this is a weird thing, that one of my own things, you won't find it in a proper book, but I always put it that Satan wants to live on earth because he doesn't want the place that God has prepared for him. Do you remember in Matthew 25? Jesus says, God has prepared a place for him and we are not supposed to go there. But if we follow Satan, we will end up there. And that's not good for us. It's not good for us. But as far as God is concerned, Satan's got his place. But Satan thought, I don't like that place. I know I'm going to get kicked out of heaven because God won't put up with me forever. Because look what I'm doing. Ha ha. And so he wanted to come to earth. So Satan has designs on our home that God created for us to live in with God, him, not Satan. Satan wants to invade our world. He's here. Where am I? That's right. And in our weakness, we don't have to worry about being weak, because as Paul put it, in our weakness, that is when God's strength shows through. And again, there's loads of Bible stories we can do with that. And sometimes in Joshua's battles, God just supernaturally won the day. Other times they had to work really hard. But one thing was true, it was never their weakness that let them down, only their attitude. And then I've got, for my next one, the importance of our presence. I've already talked about our feet making a physical presence. It just, something seems to be about feet in this story. But it's our actual presence. You know how I often see it, and I hope I don't replicate it, but married couple sitting, and it's typically him going, and he's not listening to a word that she's saying. Oh, you're surprised, Judith. Oh, I didn't realise you hadn't thought of that before. Yeah. But we have to presence ourselves. Actually, we have to be engaging with people, not just passing ships in the night, which is especially on my heart in a cafe, where I not only want to give somebody a cup of coffee, in the ideal world, at some point, I'll be able to sit down with them and have a chat and all. Investing in people and in situations. You're doing that as a church already by investing in the community. But notice I say investing. Don't look at it what it costs us. Regard it as an investment that will bring a return. Finally, well, not quite finally yet, earning the authority to speak into a situation. Sometimes there's some people that just speak out what they think, and they can be quite hard. They can be quite, often what they say isn't appropriate because they haven't tried to put themselves into the other person's situation. You have to earn the right sometimes to speak. You can speak compliment, much better than you can speak rebuke. In order to speak rebuke, you have to work very hard to earn that right, I would suggest. Historically, the church seemed to think that it could just spout and sort of tell people what to do. Well, we're past that. We're back into earning the right to speak, earning the authority or earning the trust. Call it what you like. And finally, on that point, incarnational, the long word. Jesus came into the world. We have to, in some cases, go into their world, whoever their world or that situation is. So if you join the Bold Club, hoping to reach the Bold Club for the Lord, then maybe you just have to do an awful lot more bowling than you really would want to. See what I mean? Your being there matters. Your being into a cafe matters. When one of you guys comes in the cafe, it's really wonderful. Even if you actually feel you're wasting your time and you didn't really like the coffee, and it's wonderful because your presence is important. Notice presence, I use that word again. It's more than doing, it's being. And the theologians call that incarnational. What's the equivalent of those stones from the middle of the river? I'm not saying we build statues, I'm not saying we build big edifices, although, you know, past generations did. What about journaling? Do you actually keep a journal or a diary of what God does for you, what God says to you? I know some people have done that all their lives, other people find it more of a challenge, like myself. You think, I'll never forget what God has done for me. But so you do. I've looked at some of my old photos. Yeah, I've got to get rid of some of my old photos. I've got thousands of them. And do you remember the day when you were young and you had this friend from school and you had your picture taken with them, and you think, I'll never forget that. But I can't remember my friend's name and I don't know what year it was. Where was it? It's not like Google, where it actually tells you where and when, and their AI will tell you who it is, and if you've got the right... It's we do need to write down what God has done for us, because it leaves so much. And sometimes by reading it, you can encourage yourself, because the whole point is here to help us take the next step, to help us stand when we're under attack, to help us not to get down when people are trying to crush us. And then since I've talked about photos, I thought, what about curating some photos of what God has done? You know how you have a photo album of when you went on safari, if you've done that, or in my case, a photo album of when I went to Israel, and when a photo album of when I went to Tasmania, and a photo... How about a photo album of some of the things that God has done for you? Writing on the back of the photo, when and where... And how you felt. Don't know. I'm not really into souvenirs, fridge magnets. I'm marrying somebody who needs a bigger fridge. You ought to see how many fridge magnets she has. Souvenirs. I don't know. But it's something maybe special. Again, I'm marrying somebody who's got a warthog. It's a clay warthog, and it means something very special to her. I think it reminds her of me, really. But anyway, she bought it in Africa, and it meant an awful lot to her because she was supporting a local craftsman, and that's when God revealed to her that you don't go there to do it for them. You go there to help them to do it for themselves. That warthog is staying because that's a very powerful memory, very powerful message. And then the idea is that they said, when your children see this, I don't know that we've been very good at this as a generation, passing on to our children. Again, this is a reflection. Some people have passed on their faith to their children, and it's fantastic. Others of us have had more, at the moment, difficulty. I notice the promises that when they are old, it doesn't talk about teenagers, adolescents, or when they're sort of running around like headless chickens building their own careers. But the promise is that when they are old, they will come back to the way that we taught them. Yeah. But I want my children back sooner. Yes. 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 And so maybe pointing out some of our souvenirs, some of our photos, perhaps even telling them a story from our journal, maybe that'll help. I'll just share that with you. And I thought to myself, that's a good place to end. So I found that challenging working on that. Thank you so much for being a good stimulus.